We're back in the sports bar, live from Fatso's XL. When you're at a place called Fatso's XL, you know you're going to talk some sports. We're in Gates, Buffalo Road, right in front of Tinseltown. Look forward to seeing you this afternoon as we continue to talk Bills and Dolphins this afternoon. The newlywed Mike Rodak joining us in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. Mike, I know you had a good weekend, so how you been?
I've been good. I'm just looking at the weather right now for Fort Lauderdale, packing my bags. Might be heading out one day early tomorrow. So, well, you know, a nice 84 degrees on Sunday, 74 when I land tomorrow afternoon. So I don't think I'll be needing the winter coat for this one.
Yeah, is that the honeymoon, Mike? Is the new Mrs. Rodak get to make this trip with you?
She doesn't. So, no, not quite yet. This is this would just be pure business down there, you know, golf.
And, yeah, of course, all business, right? Yeah.
Game tomorrow night.
Uh-huh, all business. You're covering the Sabres now for ESPN, too, so it is. It's all business, Mike. I'm sure this is never going to come up again in terms of the continuous negotiation that is marriage.
Oh, yeah. Basically covering the Sabres. I'm going to the game tomorrow night. You know, I'm going to pay $31 to get in. I'll buy a couple beers, and, you know, maybe I'll tweet once or twice. Yeah, I'll cover it.
Talking to Mike Rodak, newly engaged. Again, we offer our congratulations to Mike as
newly married.
Yeah, newly married. Newly engaged. Newly married. So we just learned all about that in the matter of a week here. Mike, as far as the Dolphins game on Sunday, gosh, how do you attack this Dolphins defense? Because it seems like against the run, you see Kiko Alonso, he's putting up good numbers, but overall, the run defense for Miami, not so good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because the Bills' running game, as we know, has not been so good themselves. It's been Josh Allen. If you go back to the Vikings game in Week 3 and then this past Sunday as well, with Allen essentially running for 101 yards before those two last kneel downs. If you look at just the running back for the Bills, they have the fifth lowest yards per carry this season and the fewest rushing touchdowns. So it may be an issue for Miami defense, but it's also an issue for the Bills offense as well. So maybe this is a game where that gets back on track. I know you could argue that the Jets game was a boost for the running game. I don't really think it carried over, though, after the bye week against the Jaguars. So if you're in the attack of the Dolphins defense, obviously that would be the ideal first place to start, but this offense right now is really running through Josh Allen based on what we saw on Sunday. Obviously, there's an element of the deep ball that has been helping them a little bit, you know, with Robert Foster the last couple of weeks, and maybe that helps open up the running game as well. But as things stand right now with that the Bills rushing attack, I would not have a ton of confidence in them exploiting that weakness.
Mike, what about the weakness of the Miami Dolphins defense as far as covering the tight end? I mean, three TDs to tight ends against Indianapolis last week and the potential return of Charles Clay. So I guess my question is, one, how is Clay looking for this weekend? And two, do you think that's a matchup that can be exploited by Josh Allen and the Bills offense?
Maybe. I think Clay is looking pretty good to play based on what we've seen the last couple of days. He's been limited both days, but certainly seems like he's on track to come back this week, and maybe won't be a full workload out there. But, having him on the field is one thing, but having him actually be a factor in the offense is another. And it's just, it hasn't really been there for Charles Clay this season. You know, 19 catches so far this year puts him on pace for his worst year since 2012. It's just, it hasn't been a good signing. I mean, that goes back, obviously, to the Doug Whaley administration, but never really came together for Charles Clay. And it's hard, you go into a game, you look at, again, what you said, the opposing tight ends and the opposing defenses and what they're giving up to tight ends. I just don't think the Bills ever really truly exploit that. Aside from a game here or there from Charles Clay, I mean, he hasn't caught a touchdown pass since Week 3 of last season. So I'm sure they played some defenses over that time that aren't so great against tight ends, but not a whole lot of optimism there. And then, you look at Jason Kroom. I know some fans get excited about him, and we've seen a lot of them in the last couple weeks when Clay has been out, and just not a whole lot there either, at least in my eyes with him. I know there was that one, bigger catch that he had, and then he ended up fumbling it against the Bears, I believe it was, and Had another pass go through his hand against the Jaguars on Sunday that I thought he should have caught down the right sideline. You know, certainly has the athletic potential, but I don't know if it's ever really going to come together for him on the football field. So the Bills had a better tight end and somebody that was more of a consistent weapon, then maybe that would be an option. But I don't see it with this game.
Yeah, as far as LeSean McCoy, are we getting close to the point where we could say he's losing a step here, Mike?
You know, I think he is. And I think we saw that particularly in Sunday's game. There was a couple plays, at least one I can remember, where it was not even a run. It was a screen pass to the left. He got the ball in space. There was a couple of defenders, maybe 5-10 yards downfield, and he didn't make them miss. That was his bread and butter, was getting the ball in the open field and making guys miss. That was what had made LeSean McCoy's career essentially over his first 8-9 years. Now that he's in his 10th season, I just don't know if it's still there. And that's to be expected, given his age. I don't think it's any sort of knock against him. It's not there when he has the ball in his hands in the open field. I think his best play, honestly, on Sunday was a 2nd-and-3 run. He ran straight forward. He didn't go left and right. He didn't dance. He got 4 yards. He got the first down. He moved the chains. It wasn't anything spectacular, but that's what they need. I mean, that's what they were getting out of Chris Ivory, too, before his injury. And I would argue that Chris Ivory was playing better than LeSean McCoy by the time that Ivory got hurt. But, yeah, it's gotten to that point where I think you have to make a realistic estimation of how much he has left and how much it would make sense for the Bills to keep him next season. I know Brandon Bean's already come out and said that he's definitely going to be on the team next year, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if that's the wisest move. I don't know if it was the wisest move to pass up on whatever they could have got for him at the trade deadline either. So, there's a big question mark there. Again, he could come out. There's 5 games left. He could have another 100-yard rushing game, and people could say, well, he still has it. But when you look at the bigger picture, the production just continues to decline on average for him from what we saw 2 or 3 years ago.
Mike Rodak, ESPN.com, joining us in the sports bar live from Fatso's XL, Danger and Battaglia on ESPN Rochester. Mike, it's unsustainable to think that Josh Allen is going to rush for 100 yards every time he's out there. Or is it? I mean, you heard a lot of comparisons, and we know how Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott love them some Carolina Panthers football. We've heard some comparisons to Cam Newton, and he certainly looked the part on Sunday. Looked more like Cam Newton than some of the other guys he's been compared to since coming into the league. What are your thoughts on what we can expect to see in terms of Josh Allen's progression this week against Miami?
Yeah, I'm not sure that really what they want him to be doing is running as often as he did. He was not only the leading rusher, but I believe he also ran more than any other player on the team. And you look at quarterbacks through the first 6 games before Josh Allen got hurt, he actually had the 3rd most carries in the NFL behind Cam Newton and Sean Watson. So he's running a lot. And obviously a lot of it's not design running. A lot of it's just him getting out of the pocket and seeing a chance to scramble. And in a lot of cases, he's making something out of it. You know, the 45-yarder, for instance, in the 4th quarter on Sunday. But then he talked to Brian Daboll. He talked to Sean McDermott to some extent. And you'll hear some of their language where they'll say, you know, we need to protect him and make sure he's not taking hits and make sure he's running smartly, I think is the word we've heard a few times this week. You do hear them pumping the brakes a little bit. And Sean McDermott will also say that there's a fine line between trying to discourage your quarterback from running, but also allowing him to try to make a play. And he pointed to, like you mentioned, Cam Newton for his experience in Carolina, but also Donovan McNabb's experience back in Philadelphia as some examples of, you know, there's always a conversation about what's too much and what's too little. And even a couple of years ago, I remember being at the owners' meeting trying to cover Ron Rivera for the NFC coaches' breakfast, and that was one of the big topics that year was how can they turn this offense and evolve this offense away from Cam Newton running. So even though there is a propensity and a skill from the Panthers and Cam Newton to do that, there's obviously a downside. And I think the Bills at some point will experience that downside if this race continues to stay the same. And I think might be a Josh Allen injury if he continues to run as much as he is and can take some of the hits that he did on Sunday as well. I mean, that 45-yarder, he was still trying to get some extra yards and ended up getting his knees taken out in that one. There's another one, I believe, later in that drive where he was twisted up down near the goal line and had his knees all tangled. So there's no sense in trying to do that if you don't need to. And as much as the competitive spirit and competitive fire and spark and the energy and all those words you hear about him being used, if he's hurt, then all of that goes away. And so that's the balance the Bills need to find for now.
Mike Grodak, ESPN.com, joining us in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia.
Yeah, Mike, the Jordan Phillips story, to me, it's interesting on a few levels. Why did Miami, how does it get to a point where a talent like that, hey, you know what, we're good, go somewhere else, even if that's a divisional rival with Phillips? And is he a guy that you could see the Bills actually rallying around? Because, you know, just from my limited dealings there, you're there every day. I'm only floating in every once in a while, but it seems like that's a player that you know, has really gained respect in that locker room.
Yeah, to some extent. And I guess I'm careful not to overplay Jordan Phillips too much because I think he's been okay. You know, he's obviously, people have taken notice to him because of some of the on the field dancing, and he's trying to pump up the crowd a lot. He's a higher energy player. Certainly people, you know, I've seen that and I think have figured out his name from that. I don't know if he's really been incredibly disruptive, you know, aside from a few plays here and there. So I don't know if it'll be a rallying point or if he'll be a key player by any means. You know, it's hard to tell exactly why, you know, the Dolphins let go of him, but, you know, there's certainly, you know, there's been some stories about his playing time and some of the frustrations he had there. But for instance, right now I'm looking at Pro Football Focus, which of course grades all the players in the NFL. They have 117 defensive tackles graded in the NFL. Jordan Phillips ranks 113. So by that standard, he's the fifth worst defensive tackle in the NFL. And again, I don't know if that's going to be a game-changing player for either side.
Mike Grodak, ESPN.com, our guest in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. Can we talk a little bit about the Bills' offensive line with Searles getting some practice reps from what we understand? And of course, Wyatt Teller now. How do you think Teller has progressed since becoming a starter? And what do we know about Searles for Sunday?
Yeah, it seems like Teller's done a better job than, obviously, Vladimir Gutas was a few games before he got benched. It's just a matter of, can he be consistent enough? Can they rely on him enough to start him next season? That's really the operative question for them, and that's obviously why he's in there, is they're trying to get a good look at him for next season. And, you know, for Searles, it's probably a different situation. He's a little bit of an older player. He's been in the league for a few years now. I don't know if, you know, there's any serious consideration about starting him next year, right guard or right tackle, but why not give him a shot? You know, that's obviously the thinking right now with John Miller hurt. I think they know what they have in Ryan Roy, and I'm not sure that they love what they have in Ryan Roy, and he's a free agent after this year. I'd not expect him back. I'd probably not expect John Miller back. I wouldn't expect Jordan Mills back at right tackle. I think there's going to be a lot of changes along this line next season. Potentially Wyatt Teller starting left guard, but maybe they try to draft somebody and have a competition there. Maybe they go out and sign a free agent. They have a lot of cap space as well. So really from left guard all the way to right tackle, I could see different linemen playing for this team next year, starting for this team. And that's just part of the process right now for them is just trying to figure out if they have anything on their current roster that they want to keep.
Mike Grodak, ESPN.com. Mike, I'm having trouble figuring out this Dolphin team. Yes, more wins than the Buffalo Bills, but they've had some really bad losses, including last week blowing a 10-point lead against the Colts. So, I mean, do you have any sense of what to expect out of the opponent this week?
Yeah, I just never inspired by this Dolphins team, and maybe that's just from watching them play the Bills, you know, twice a year. The Bills always seem to have the upper hand. I mean, they're 7-3. The Bills are against the Dolphins since 2013, which was my first season covering the team. That was obviously the beginning of the Doug Marrone year as well. Over that time, the Bills have only committed 2 turnovers against the Dolphins, and both of those were back in 2013. They were both on Zach Lewis interceptions. So in the past, 8 games, they have not turned the ball over against the Miami Dolphins. Meanwhile, the Dolphins have turned the ball over 18 times over the past 10 games. So it's been a pretty one-sided series over that five, 6 years now. And every time I see the Dolphins, again, I haven't really watched too much this year. I'm never too inspired by Ryan Tannehill. And I just think they tend to be a loose group in terms of penalties, in terms of discipline. I know, you know, they made a move away from that this offseason, or at least they tried to, with Jarvis Landry being shipped out and Ndamukong Suh being cut as well. You know, obviously, two more controversial players there. But I just don't know if they're capable of playing a solid enough game against the Bills to come away with a win. And that's obviously, even considering that, you know, all the problems that the Bills have this season too. I just see them as being two teams headed in different directions. And my pick for this game is the Bills.
I love hearing that, Mike. And I think you and I park our cars in the same garage. I'm curious about how you feel like the rest of the league is viewing Buffalo right now. Let's face it. It's been an up and down year, mostly down for the Buffalo Bills, but two game winning streak. Josh Allen looking competent, which is really all you can expect out of a rookie quarterback at this point of the season. You know, Miami, let's look at the Bills' last two opponents that they defeated. I mean, you know, Todd Bowles, his seat didn't get any cooler losing to the Bills, and certainly Doug Marrone has issues as well in Jacksonville, firing Hackett after that, you know, debacle last week. You know, if Adam Gase loses to Buffalo on Sunday, I got to imagine talk is going to start to increase in Miami about what this guy's doing as our head coach moving forward as well.
It should, yeah. That's totally fair. I think Ryan Tannehill talk has already started about whether he's their long-term solution. I mean, really, it should have started a year or two ago. I don't know what they've been waiting on, and they passed up on drafting a quarterback this year. And, you know, good luck on finding one in next year's draft. There probably isn't one unless Justin Herbert comes out. So, yeah, it's a team that's probably stuck in the middle. I think that was the read on it entering the season. I think there was optimism about Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill reuniting after the injury last year and maybe getting back to the playoffs like they did in 2016. But I just don't see it. I don't see that happening, you know, given how things are unfolding in the AFC. I think that the inside track is obviously either the Ravens or the Colts for that final wild card spot. And I put Andrew Luck over Ryan Tannehill any day of the week. So, yeah, it's another situation in the AFC East where you just don't know where that team's heading. And I'd say they're in a worse spot at quarterback than either the Bills or the Jets are naturally after the Bills drafted Josh Allen and the Jets drafted Sam Darnold.
Mike, we got to ask you about the big story business-wise for the Buffalo Bills or for PSC, where they've hired this high-power consultant, a firm that's worked with the Falcons, the Vikings, as far as getting their new stadiums done. So we could see this perhaps heading in a direction, maybe. What's your sense here? Are the Pegulas their preference, would you say, right now? Is it to build the new stadium? What are your thoughts on the story that they've hired this consultant?
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest step forward that they've made since being owners. I know there was a lot of conjecture. There was a lot of talk. You know, every owners' meetings, we talked to Terry Pegula or Kim Pegula or Russ Brannon when he was still around, and there would be some sort of comment from them. There would always be a comment from Roger Goodell, either at the owners' meetings or at the full press conference that he does. And there was never any tangible step forward from them. And this is really the first step. With that, I think there could be more behind the scenes going on than we know or than is public. Certainly you have the political element where Andrew Cuomo was reelected in November. There's some security there as far as who they're dealing with from a negotiation standpoint. And then locally as well, Mark Olenkars, the county executive in Erie County, being reelected as well this year. You know, they know who's going to be sitting at the table. I think if I was a betting man, I think downtown stadium that is at least partially funded by public money, that's certainly the direction this seems to be heading. We know that there's been real estate purchases by the Pegulas downtown. We know that house values in certain areas have gone up a lot more than they should. So you know, there's a lot of writing on the wall, and I think, you know, this consulting firm has been brought in. I think some of the answers are already there. Obviously, there needs to be an element of doing your due diligence and making sure that, you know, the public is satisfied with, you know, with some of the research here as far as where their money's going. But at the end of the day, I'd be shocked if the stadium stays in Orchard Park. I'd be shocked if there's a renovation to New Era Field. I think that the odds-on favorite right now is a new stadium being built downtown in the vicinity of some of their other properties.
Can we afford that? I mean, I'm being honest, and I guess that's the question we got to actually ask here is that, I mean, yes, this study will come back and say this is the new thing, and then they'll go to the state. I mean,
well, the study will come back and it'll say that fans don't want a stadium downtown because they like New Era Field. Isn't that correct, Mike?
I think that there will be a degree of fan input as far as tailgating and, you know, the old school feel of New Era Field that fans do like. I don't know at the end of the day how much that will matter. I know there was public comments this week about, you know, fan input being important in the study, but at the end of the day, the Pagulas don't want the debauchery that comes along with some of the tailgating in Orchard Park. They want tailgating, don't get me wrong, but they don't want all the headaches that, you know, some of that lawlessness causes. And when you have, you know, Pagula-owned bars like the Labatt House, which just opened downtown, next to the Sabres Arena, you have 716 and Harbor Center. Presumably other Pagula properties will pop up. It's easier to control crowds that way and have a more controlled atmosphere when it's, you know, a bar setting or a restaurant setting as opposed to you know, some of the lawlessness, again, in the tailgating. So more of a mix there, I think, between tailgating and, you know, restaurant setting will be the most likely outcome there. Again, just based on, you know, what I'm hearing, shall we say.
Well, what's the league's position on this? Have they said anything? Or are they just kind of taking a step back here? Or is anybody publicly kind of given, I'm sure behind closed doors, the Pagulas have gotten an elbow to the ribs as far as getting going here, but what do we know about the league's stance on the Buffalo Stadium situation, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, Roger Goodell has been careful with his words the last couple of years when talking about it. At the end of the day, the league is in the business of A, making money, and B, building stadiums. And, you know, those tend to come along with each other. When you build a new stadium, there's a lot more revenue opportunities as far as suites and club areas and you know, if you build a indoor or somehow enclosed stadium, obviously there's a revenue stream that comes to the team as well with some of the other events that could be held there. So, you know, it's certainly, I think at the end of the day, the league would be happy if a new stadium is built in Buffalo. I don't think they have any interest in trying to prop up the dinosaur that is New Era Field. And let me just say this. I mean, I've traveled almost every NFL stadium now. There's a couple I think I still have to get to: Arizona, Dallas, and the new 49ers stadium, I think, are the final three for me. And by far, you know, the Buffalo Bills have the most outdated NFL stadium, except for Oakland, which we know is already going to be gone in a year or two. So,
Mike,
not as if the Bills are keeping up with the league at all. And I know Bills fans, they like the charm of it. There's an old school element, but they have fallen behind unequivocally, and I think the league knows that, the Bills know that, and something has to be done about that.
Mike Rodeck, ESPN.com, our guest in the sports bar, Danger and Battaglia on ESPN Rochester, always gracious with his time. Mike, what are you working on for the site?
Yeah, so I know the Nathan Peterman story has faded a little bit since he's been gone, and he had to work out with the Lions last week. He has one coming with the Denver Broncos, it sounds like, based on the reporting of Ryan Talbot over at NewYorkUpstate.com. But, you know, there's a certain point with Nathan Peterman, at least, you know, when he was cut, where it seemed like it was overkill, you know, as far as what people were saying about him and some of the jokes, et cetera. I actually talked to Ken McCloken, who was a quarterback for the Falcons in the 70s, had a terrible passer rating, terrible interception rate, arguably the only worst quarterback than Nathan Peterman since the merger. And he has a few thoughts on Nathan Peterman and some of the reception that he's gotten. So that will be up later this week on the website.
Mike, appreciate your time. Congratulations once again. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you.